Hello, everybody. This is the Somewhere on Earth podcast, and it's Tuesday, the 30th of April, 2024, as we release this wonderful podcast into the world. There we say it ourselves. Wonderful. There you go. So modest. We are in our studio here in London, and we have at least one voice from Mexico City today. And one of those voices from London, alongside mine, is Ghislaine Boddington, expert commentator, here with your analysis as well, Ghislaine. And I sometimes rather amorphously call you an expert commentator. How should I refer to you for the top then today?
Yes.
Are you happy with expert commentator?
I am. Although, you know, I'm not necessarily a total expert on all these subjects, but
yeah, sure.
I've done my research and I'm ready to go. And I'm looking forward to our discussions about it, Gareth, which we can always buzz off each other. And of course, the people that are coming to speak to us.
That's how it's going to work. So to ease us into things then, what about some of the things that have been on your mind this week, Ghislaine? Do you have any gossip for us, or do you want to share what's been occupying you, as it were?
I've been bubbling along on and positively, feeling positive about new innovations and new initiatives that I can feel starting to really emerge and make sense post-lockdown. And one of the projects I've been working on, linked to my university, Greenwich, has been, it's called the Enterprise Challenge. And all the students across the whole university can apply to it with a new business idea. And we had a wonderful time. I was mentoring one of the students, and she did win a prize, the Social Impact Prize, Siobhan Abdurrahman, with her Buddy app, which is a safety app for women to be able to go out to music events, to go meet up with each other, look after each other and get home safe, yeah? But also some very lovely ideas, like one around alcohol-free and how to become alcohol-free, and another one, an engineering one, Quick Switch, which is a special device for an SD card, which allows you to use it on the move and never runs out of space on your camera.
Oh, wow.
But there was 149 of these ideas, and they were just, they gave me a lot of hope and a lot of buzz.
Sure thing. Exactly. And technologies that we hope are going to see, you know, live beyond the Enterprise Challenge and end up in the world doing great things, and quite a good tech for good element there.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Yep.
But with some business plans and some enterprise nous behind them as well.
And they've all got little startup funds now too. So those three were the winners, actually. So so congratulations
that.
To them. Yeah. They're on their way.
And the idea of you mentoring as well.
I really enjoyed mentoring Siobhan. It was great to
good
work together.
You.
Yeah.
And her as well. Okay, let's jump in. And coming up today, well, a theme that we all really need in this edition, especially if you happen to live somewhere mired by conflict. Yes, we're talking about AI for peace. It's an antidote to all the usual discussion about algorithmic warfare and hate speech and the like. A new book lays out a roadmap for harnessing AI to help alleviate conflict and make the world a more peaceful place. Also in this edition, we're celebrating World Password Day. Yes, there is such a thing, and it is this week. Prepare to feel ever so pleased with yourself if you have separate strong passwords for all your accounts. But on the other hand, are some of us perhaps skulking at the back of the class if we still let ourselves down by setting rubbish, rather weak passwords and then hoping that nothing bad will happen? Well, it's all up for discussion right here on the Somewhere on Earth podcast. Sudan, Israel, Iran, Gaza, Ukraine, Syria. Yes, so many conflict zones, so little peace. So may we take some solace from a new roadmap for harnessing the benefits of AI to help make the world a more peaceful place. After all, we're often hearing all about the evils of machine learning, but from forecasting political violence to fighting hate speech, AI has much to offer in tackling conflict and the sources of conflict. These peaceful ideas have come together in the appropriately titled book, AI for Peace. One of its authors is Branka Panic, and she joins us from Mexico City. Branka is also director of the organisation AI for Peace. Welcome along to Somewhere on Earth, Branka.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you along. So one of the things you talk about, there's a whole suite of technologies called peace tech. So we've heard of the likes of fintech, for instance, and climate tech. So peace tech, tell me a bit more about that.
Sure. Peace tech is an entire set of technologies that peace builders started looking at or started exploring in their own work. So early on as just the use of mobile phones or in some settings, even radio, where people are predominantly using radio as a source of information, the radio can be a very powerful tool for informing communities about the upcoming violence or giving them ideas how to sustain peace in their own societies. So for more than a decade now, peace builders were adding to this, I like to call this a toolbox of a peace builder, searching for different technologies that can be useful in their work. And AI, we are exploring AI now as another tool in this toolbox.
So give me a few examples of how AI might be part of this toolbox.
Well, starting from conflict prediction, I think conflict prediction traditionally has been an idea and the goal of every peace builder. We want to know what is happening. We want to know when the crisis is coming in a certain region, in a certain part of a country, and we want to be ready for what is coming. This is applicable to peace builders, but also for humanitarian actors who are also using different artificial intelligence tool to make sure that we have different early warnings and to use these early warnings for early action. So I would definitely start with conflict prediction, but there are many other examples we are using and showing in the book, and they're on our own work, such as hate speech and utilization different technologies in understanding what kind of consequences hate speech is having in online spaces, but also what kind of consequences this can bring to physical spaces. Human rights protection. This is a very exciting field, and we most often hear about different negative applications of AI and consequences for human rights, which is a really important field. And we definitely cover this in the book as well. But we are also looking into potentials of different AI technologies to strengthen the work of human rights defenders. Another very interesting field is the intersection of conflict and climate. I think this one, comparatively to conflict prevention, is much earlier than the use of technologies. It's the essence even of diplomacy work, of relationships between countries to predict what is going to happen, what actions of other countries will be. While in the case of climate, this is something new the world is struggling with.
Yeah. Well, you mean because like populations getting displaced because of climate change? It could be those kinds of things. Of course, the balance of where different resources are in the world, that's very much affected by climate change. Would AI be looking into all these factors and using that as some kind of predictor?
Absolutely. Exactly. The migration or displacement is one of the very important elements where the technology is looking at. But also we are overlapping this with other factors that are happening in the society. And this is this added value that technology can bring. These patterns with economical changes, natural disaster shocks, the social mechanisms in the country, the political institutions, elections. We can overlap all of this with the data science and try to see those patterns that human eye will not necessarily always catch. And it's quite a new field as well, so we are not over-promising here. That's why we are clearly saying this is not a silver bullet for solving all of the problems, but it's definitely a potential tool that we think we should use more in the future.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AI is changing the game of business. Will you be on the winning team? I'm Jordan Wilson, the host of the Everyday AI podcast and your coach to help you learn the X's and O's of AI. Artificial intelligence isn't just a new player in the game, it's a new sport altogether. So if you don't quickly put AI into play, your competitors will run up the score. I've spent my whole life building winning teams, from coaching basketball to working with big players like Nike and Jordan Brand. My next move? helping you win with Everyday AI. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or on everydayaipodcast.com. Let's tap into AI together and put points on the board.
Worthy of investigation and highly encouraging. Glenn?
I mean, it's fascinating. And I think, you know, absolutely, it is a very new field. And you're right. It's, you know, these layers of data coming together and patterns. We need time, don't we, to be able to work with these and see what can happen. Now, I'm going to ask you about whether you've got any examples of AI being used with humans, you know, if you like co-piloting, alongside the beginning of conflict resolutions, and whether there's diplomacy or possibilities to look at resolution for war, a very obvious question at this moment, I guess.
I think this is a fascinating question because there's still not an agreement in the field of how and in which sense we can actually benefit from using artificial intelligence and data science in diplomacy, because diplomacy is essentially the human endeavor, right? It depends so much on human relationships, on building the relationships between countries, including the cultural dimension of this. There is a big question if AI can actually understand all of these nuances. And I think a lot of change happened with the start of generative AI and all of the tools that come to place with natural language processing advancements. And this is where we see first applications as well in the diplomacy. We don't cover all of them in the book, which is really important to say, because the book is just the primer. It's just the beginning to attract the attention of people to really understand what are the potentials out there. And one of them I can mention outside of the book, which is definitely the work of the United Nations, which can be covered in one book of its own, and many applications in the diplomacy with the intersection of artificial intelligence or different technologies such as virtual reality, where the technology already proved useful. And just to give one concrete example of large-scale facilitated dialogues in the peace process in Libya, where the communities were asked about their opinions in the peace process. So peace processes are usually very concentrated on small number of people that can get that place at the table. And this technology is now opening a completely new avenue of consultations with broad area of communities. And also it's giving potentially, we will see in the future how realistic this is, but potentially it's giving an opportunity to facilitate these dialogues in different languages and different dialogues as well. And the United Nations team did a great work in Libya of actually building a system that facilitated these dialogues in different dialects of Arabic language.
So that is a kind of mediation element there. And again, you're interested in that as well, aren't you? This kind of AI as a mediator function.
Yes, I really like that, your answer there and the example you've given, because this is exactly where peace negotiations, you know, of human to human do go wrong. And you're right. It's a very small community of people who have a say in what's happening. And they've also potentially they're influenced by their own political sways or, you know, their careers or whatever else. So the fact that example you gave means that it can be right down to grassroots communities, and using the dialogues that they use, using the languages they're using to get opinions, and I guess from very local areas too and smaller regions, and seeing what opinions there are in one side of a country say to another, and then that actually is starting to bring together potential peace negotiation points, yeah, that can be used between, you know, obviously with human negotiation. And this is why I'm very interested in the co-piloting of the two together.
There is a big challenge, if you can take this as a conversation, there is a big challenge as well there that we want people to be aware of, that so many of these communities still don't have an access to the technology. They don't have an access to the mobile phone or access to internet or to the laptop. Sometimes, especially in context that we are working in conflict context, the communities don't even have access to electricity. So there are huge challenges still in this place, and this is why we are advocating in AI for Peace, and the entire broader community around AI for Peace is, of course, first advocating for bridging the digital gap. And we are trying to invest in this through all of our projects, acknowledging that still not all of us have access to the technology, but we also see a huge potential of this technology also bridging this gap.
Mm. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And then, you know, on top of that, alongside access to the hardware and the software and data, access is digital literacy too, which comes into the equation there too. So there's a whole set of layers of education to be able to enable people to have a voice, yeah, to have a say into this, yeah. Yeah.
And Branka, then, you call this a roadmap. So what is it a roadmap to, essentially? Is it just to understanding more about this stuff? Is it about making sure the right people are sitting around, a diverse group of people are sitting around the table and developing these systems? Is it about rolling them out into places where conflict could be an imminent risk? I don't know. Where does this roadmap lead to?
It's, I would say, both, but with a caution around the last one, with a caution around quick deployment of solutions. And that's why we are really emphasizing this ethical dimension. But first to stress, this is really we call it a primer, a roadmap, right? A primer for people, for two groups of people. For peace builders who don't necessarily have an access or knowledge about AI, we want to add this additional tool in their toolbox, right? We want to let them know what is happening in this artificial intelligence field. We want to demystify what this technology means, what is happening in our own field of peace building if we go beyond the things that we are reading in newspapers. And we want to give these concrete examples. So we are giving a bit of a theory, but most of the primer is practice. Examples that of organizations from different sectors, from academia, governments, private sectors, but civil society organizations as well, that are already experimenting or applying different data-driven methodologies, data science, natural language processing, in advancing their mission and vision. So we want to inspire peace builders to think into the direction of artificial intelligence.
And presumably to be there to help mm-hmm. them. And just briefly, Branka, if you will, say just that last point.
The second target group, because it's very important for us, and those are the AI people, data science people, who maybe never even got a contact with peace building or peace. We want to get them excited about applying their skills in a very responsible and ethical way, so we can together advance the applications of artificial intelligence in peace building.
Branka, well, thank you. And we'll hear more from you in the subscription extra of this podcast. Just before we leave this, though, Galen, there is an important date on the calendar relating to all this, isn't there?
There is. And Branka mentioned how much the UN is doing in this area of responsible AI, AI for peace. But also they have a global summit and it's at the end of May, which is entirely about AI for good. And I had a really good look through the programme and it's fascinating. And I think I'm really with Branka there about actually what summits like that with multiple examples and her book with multiple examples can actually show AI makers, coders, etc., what they can do, would be solutions and positive side of the world rather than just working on new conflict war games for teenagers.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Okay, Galen. All right, well, that was quite cheery by our standard, wasn't it, that little chat there, you know, but very serious and purposeful as well, so I'm not in any way diminishing it, but you know what I mean. Right, now then, a bit of a subject change, but here we go. It's World Password Day this week. That's on Thursday the 2nd of May. So if you're listening to this around the time the podcast comes out, then it's going to be World Password Day. And the day is all about you. If you still use the same old password for multiple accounts, you know who you are if you do that. Or perhaps if you don't change the default password on a new device. So if you have lame, easy to guess login codes and you don't change them regularly enough, or perhaps you list them all, please tell me you don't do this, but list them all on a spreadsheet titled Passwords, then you definitely need...
No.
Glenn has her head in her hands here. Then you will need World Password Day just to get you on the right track. Which is really what it's about. It's a kind of educational day. It's designed to get us all to change our ways, to get a bit more secure, or a lot more secure in some cases. And of course, it could just help you avoid being extorted or conned or having your identity stolen or your teeth falling out. Goodness knows what else could happen. Glenn, what about you? I'm going to jump in with you on this one then. Do you need to take the password pledge? Because that's one part of this this World Password Day. I'll tell everybody about the pledge in a moment. But or are you sitting there on your moral high ground with your password app and your two-factor authentication all set up and you're completely bomb-proof?
Well, I have to be honest, I have been a lot more careful the last 3 or 4 years, But prior to that, which is another 10 years or 15 years of passwords, I haven't had time to go back through them all and check everything. Because if I look in my password vault, I've probably got 180 different passwords, things.
So many different accounts.
Yeah. But I have learned to be a lot careful, and I've listened to the inputs that we've had in various points in this show and other shows, and our special expert, Bill Thompson, who is very clear on all this. And one of the things I remember him saying, this is really about backing up as well, is to make sure that you back up on removable hard drives, that are not part of your overall system, and that you back up your passwords there too, so that you're not caught in a viral. If a virus gets you, you don't lose all that stuff. It's separate. He calls it airspace, doesn't it, between laptop and your backup system, But yes, there is lots of things, aren't there, Gareth?
Loads of things. Yeah. And I mentioned that pledge. So the people behind World Password Day, they've just come up with this one-page pledge, and they're just challenging everyone to go through this. So and it's for people to pledge, for instance, that they will create strong and unique passwords using 3 random words. The pledge also says, I will use a different password for each account. And the other one is to turn on that second layer of security. So 3, quite simple but profoundly important things to do there as part of that password pledge. And also, we have heard from one of our listeners who wants to remain anonymous, but he sent us a few of his thoughts. He's obviously good at all this kind of stuff. Here we go. Let's just listen to this first clip.
Passwords can usually be cracked by social engineering, getting somebody's date of birth or finding out on some social media platform, data breaches in companies, people guessing passwords just by random, or by malware, or what we know in the trade as physical brute force cracking, guessing every single possible letter combination. That's why we need long and strong passwords. But these passwords don't have to be 10, 16 characters long with multiple different characters, letters, special characters, numbers. I personally recommend the use of multiple words. So 3 or 4 words will give you the length that you need. But if you can throw in a word from a different language as well, then this makes things like dictionary attacks, which is a list of words which are tried, much harder to guess, because these dictionaries tend to consist of words of a single language.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that, actually, including a word from a different language. Right, so cue some Welsh language part. Nobody's ever going to guess a Welsh language password,
you've got
are
it
they?
Sorted, yes.
Whether I'll be able to kind of remember exactly how to type the password is another thing. Just lots of L's. So, Glenn, you've been looking at some stunning statistics around all this, just in terms of how many gadgets are out there and obviously all the different passwords involved. It's a big international issue, isn't it?
No, I know. I mean, there's different stats in different places, but it seems to be generally accepted as about 8 billion mobile gadgets in use around the world. In fact, I think probably more, because there's other stats that say there's 2 for each of us, But 3,000 billion passwords in use. Yeah.
Whoa.
And of course, one of the key things one has to say up front on this is that we're all working our working our guts out to try and make sure we are secure, etc. Most people are. But actually, we do know, and it's generally accepted, that the manufacturers could do more to protect us at the back end. But of course, that and also as it's happening. But that, of course, costs money, staffing, etc. You know, so and then the multi-factor authentication stuff, or two-factor, twin-factor authentication, like using a password and your fingerprint, etc. This is becoming more and more used, isn't it? Do you have it on some of yours?
And nearly all my accounts now, you have to put in an SMS password. And in some cases, you have to do at least two SMS passwords alongside your usual one, you know. Which is great, two or even three-factor authentication. Yep. So that's the way it's going.
And some of them with biometrics, which, of course, you need to be careful of, because they can be really helpful in relationship to stopping ransomware attacks, etc. But also, you shouldn't give your biometric information to companies if possible.
And so if they're asking for it, you keep it on your device.
Yeah, you keep it to you. It's yours. It's your body. You know,
and you only get one set of fingerprints, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Or one retina.
Yeah, you know, once it's gone. And there is there's definitely on the dark web there are fingerprints for sale.
Oh, goodness.
So one has to be very careful.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned there on devices as well. And in fact, in 2022, the UK brought into law legislation that prohibits default passwords on networks devices. It's a step forward there in that particular law. I'm sure there are equivalents in other countries. Just before we go, let's have another word or a few words or a few passwords of wisdom from our listener.
If you're going to do something like picking four words, then I would also suggest adding a number or special character within a middle of a word, so that word no longer becomes a dictionary word. Taking the word house, for instance, house, you may add a letter, a number, or a special character in the middle of it. So house would become house. So if you were to pick one, you could use house, book, chair, and then the word for tree in a foreign language. Add the special character, add a number. So if you have a set of rules that say after the fourth letter you add a number or a special character, and then also start and end your password with special characters, then all you will need to do is remember three or four words. And we can type words faster than typing 8, 9, 10, or even possibly 16 special characters.
There are more top advice there.
Wow, that's very, very clever. I'm going to have to try and remember that. It's about patterning, isn't it?
It is. Patterning. Yeah, it's just and having a kind of way of doing it, I suppose, that obviously you know yourself, but a password hacker isn't going to know. Yeah. And then a few of those little tricks, put in an asterisk here or there to make it a non-dictionary word. Yeah, get it. Right, I'm going to do that password pledge because I'm so not on my moral high ground here as well. Another bit of advice, by the way, coming from World Password Day, is when you can to store your passwords in your browser. Which is kind of, I'm doing most of the time already.
Really. Right, yeah.
So, all right, lots to think about there. Let's think about it even more in the Podcast Extra subscription version, where we'll have a bit more from Branka and more chat from Galen and I, and we'll bring you some cakes or something as well if we can manage that on the podcast. So there we are. As for this edition, thanks for being with us. You probably know all the socials by now, but on the email, we always like emails, hello@somewhereonearth.co. That's hello@somewhereonearth.co. WhatsApp works out well, code 44 for the UK, 7486329484. That's code 44, 7486329484. And just about everywhere else, if you look up SOEP Tech or Soap Tech. Before we go, though, let's do the credits. Let's see who's behind the glass there. We've got Keziah is over there making it all sound good. We've got Dylan on the desk here as well. Is Callum still here? He said a minute ago. But we'll credit Callum anyway. He's a good guy. And we have production managing everything is Liz Tui. The producer is Anya Litterovich, and providing brilliant expertise and wonderful company in the studio, Glenn Boddington. And you're the listener, the most important person in the room. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.